You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast for a special edition. It's All-Star break. We've taken this is on a Thursday, so we haven't been off that long, but it's a special edition. We're calling it Future Salary Cap Pacers Breakdown. We're going to go through the next three off seasons and do it. And of course, to do it with me is my lovely co-host, Tony East. Tony, you hit a big interview on Monday. How was the JJ interview?
Oh man, it was fun to do. I hope you guys enjoyed it. It was really fun for me to do just because I don't know anything about sideline reporting and stuff like that. And he had really cool stories, which I hope you guys love those. And if you haven't listened, go back and listen to it because it was awesome.
Yeah, Tony is now making it up the chain of Pacer personalities. He's next stop. He's going to be the number one Pacer writer in the city. That's his goal.
Yeah, that is fair, but I don't think I'll ever get to that point. Mark Monteith is a legend, man. He's got a hold on that market.
But you're the new school. He's the old school. He's the old guard. You're the new guard. Tony's moving up. But I hope you guys enjoy that JJ podcast. We're actually recording this one on a Sunday, so we're sort of talking like it was in the past. If anyone hasn't posted yet, but
that's so hard.
We're weird on tense.
It's impossible. I'm so bad at we always do this on game days and joke about it. Like, oh, tonight's game. And then the whole time we're talking like tomorrow. It's so hard.
Yeah. It probably bothers people, but they can get over it. I don't know. You listen to this podcast, but at this point you're used to it. It's a running little joke on this show. But so let's move to today's show. We are going to do a little special kind of future Pacers thing. We had some time off. The All-Star break is 9 god dang days long, and
there's no trade rumors like last year, so there's just nothing to do.
And Vic didn't play that well in the dunk contest, and if he played great in the All-Star game, we don't know yet, but there's not a lot of content, let's put it that way. And we thought it'd be kind of cool to just sort of map out a blueprint that we kind of see for the Pacers through the next three seasons. The way this is kind of going to work is we're going to start in the 2018, talk some big questions, cap space, things like that, and we'll move in 2019 and 20 and so on. It'll be sort of free-flowing like most of our podcasts. They're not going to be like a set structure. We have some questions and stuff like that. But so we're sort of going to start with the cap space and just go from there and try to figure out some moves. And hopefully when we're done with it, we can sort of map out how we think the Pacers get to the, let's say, NBA Finals by the year 2020.
We are also going to operate under the assumption that the team improves in a normal manner. They don't get like randomly really good or bad because that would change everything they would do.
Yeah, we're going to project players how we think they're on sort of their current projections, not based on what happens in the offseason or stuff like that, or not some random draft guy. We're sort of going to look at it as if the team today is the team that's going to be the core in 3 years.
Exactly. Like if Miles Turner takes an Oladipo-ian jump in his talents next year, then that would significantly change what I would say. But we cannot predict that.
No. So we'll project him like we kind of think he's going to be, but we're not going to be unrealistic, let's put it that way. We're going to try to stay realistic. We're probably going to use some generalities with cap numbers, stuff like that. We're not going to try to be too exact, but I can't.
Oh, yes,
Tony is. I can't help that.
I got to make sure that my $7,416 they paid Jared Uthoff's on my cap sheet. I almost forgot.
Oh, God. All right. Let's start here. So this summer, Pacers will have some cap space depending on player pickups, things like that. Tony, you want to walk through kind of the option dates for Joseph and Young, and then the team option dates for Bojan, Collinson, and Jefferson.
Yep. So the order of events will be once the Pacers season's over, really the clock starts. But the NBA season's ending is when the options are really in the limelight. So either 2 days before the NBA draft or 2 days after the finals, which it's going to be 2 days after the finals. That'll be the one that's first. Corey Joseph has to decide on his player option. And by then, you know, that's a tough time for him because he doesn't really know what the market's going to be. So, you know, that's a hard time to know if you think you can get more or less money than that. And then on the 29th of June, that'll be a huge day for the Pacers. There's three things. Lance Stephenson and Joe Young's team options decisions have to be made by that day. Thaddeus Young's player option decision has to be made by that day. And Bojan's whole salary guarantees for the next season that day. So that could change how much cap space they have by like almost $30 million in one day. And then the other important players, Darren Collison His is July 1st, his full 10 million guarantees. And then EK, his full money guarantees July 15th. And then Poitras's is July 25th. And then Al Jefferson is January of 2019. So not even really on the radar for their offseason, really.
Yeah, so let's start with the guards because that's sort of the easiest way to start. So the Pacers will have to make a decision, I believe, between three point guards. I think they'll have to choose between Collison, Young, and Joseph and pick two of them. Now, it's probably a chain reaction based on what Joseph does. If Joseph picks up his team option, I think there's a chance you could see Joseph and Collison both on the team and show Young cut. If Joseph doesn't, then there's a decision of how much is he worth in the offseason and things like that, you know, and how much you want to pay for the two point guards. I think paying more than $20 million for three point guards is probably too much. They probably right where they want to be, between the 20 and 25 range for three guards, if not a little less. But that's kind of where the team has to look at it, is they've got to pick two point guards. I think we also can agree Stevenson's going to get picked up. His option is so little that the team's going to pick it up, right?
Yeah, and he's a legend in the city. Yeah, they can't let it go.
So where do you see, first of all, who do you prefer? I mean, obviously, I think we would prefer Joseph and Collison, but factoring in salary and whatnot, who do you prefer out of, you know, you had to pick two of those three guards to be on the team next year?
Yeah, well, it depends on like who is available and who they could get to replace them, because if they could get a better replacement for similar money, then I'd probably want Joseph and Young and then get a new starter. But given what I know now about the limited market, I'd probably say that I would want both Collison and Joseph back. They just, Collison's been so good this year, and Joseph can play two positions, so in theory, that would be my dream, is to just keep them both around.
So point guard wise, I think the best ones available, I wrote down a list, is probably Tyreek Evans is probably the best value you can probably get. You know, there's going to be point guards available, but it's how many are actually available. That's one who might actually be available for the Pacers to grab. I mean, there's Isaiah Thomas, but we don't really know how good he is. Marcus Smart, I don't really think is a starting point guard.
I don't even think he's a point guard.
Yeah, he's sort of a hybrid.
I don't think him or Tyreek Evans are point guards.
Yeah, so then the other discussion is do you bring in a shooting guard and slot Depot a point guard? But I think you're still a year away from that, so I don't really want to talk about that too much until we talk about 2019. But I would agree. I think ultimately you can't – if Joseph picks up his option, you probably can't bring Collison back unless you're going to decide to run back the same roster. You know, if you're going to run back the entire same roster for another year because you make a nice playoff run, then I think you can do that. But I don't think you can afford to pay Joseph, let's say, $8 million option and Collison is 10 while still having enough cap space to maneuver to grab somebody without getting rid of another player.
Yeah. And if they want to punt on their cap space for another year, you know, maybe they'll roll with that. But yeah, that's a tough call. And it really depends what they want. And if running it back has value to them, then maybe they'll pursue that. But I don't think that they would. In my heart of hearts, I don't think both of them will be on the team next year, but I'm very confident that one of them will be on the team next year.
Yeah, and is there a possibility, too, with Collison, who is having a fantastic year, hopefully from the injury just fine, that they pick up his option but then trade it? Because a team probably has value in going out and getting Collison, and maybe you don't get a ton back, but if you got like a second-round pick that they took, you know, if somebody took him into their cap space, you know, maybe a team would be willing to trade that page something for that, or maybe it happens before even his option is picked up, you know, in that area between the draft and free agency, he gets traded for into another team. That could be a possibility.
Yeah, well, you can't trade. And another thing is you can't trade an expiring contract that expires in the summer at that time. So if Joseph opts out, they immediately can't trade him, and they, you know, it could change how they draft. Like, all that decision is just so like such a linchpin for a lot of things. Especially with cap decisions. So, you know, Collison could even come to his day and they have like not Colin Sexton, but some rookie point guard, and they know that there's going to be some guy available, and it could just change everything.
Yeah. So like they're probably not going to get one of the top point guards in the draft. I think Sexton's probably going to go top 15. The Pacers are looking at a number 20 pick for sure. So they're not going to be able to get a point guard probably in the draft unless they hit on some random. I can't name. I mean, I think Trayvon Duval, the guy from Duke. I mean, that's a guy who was top rated before the season, now has fallen back. I mean, they have to hit on some kind of really lucky thing, which I just don't see happening. But with Collison, they have the ability to run it back for an expiring deal in a sense. And by bringing him back, it's you're basically have faith that he's going to be the same player that he was this season, or he's been this season, which if you have faith he can do that, you might want to do it. But I think ultimately you got to choose between Joseph and Collison. And I think, you know, long-term, unless you think Joseph can be your starting point guard, which I'm not sure, you know, we've seen a little test of him for about 2 weeks. If you really think Corey Joseph can be your starting point guard long-term, I think it's an easy no-brainer decision. But I'm not sure the Patriots trust Joseph to be their full-time long-term point guard. So it'd have to be some, you know, and I don't think they want to pay him 4 years for 40 and something like that. So ultimately, I think it comes down to where your faith is in on Collison. I think Joe Young, no matter what, is coming back because he's so cheap and he's shown flashes. Now, I don't know if you can trust him in a, you know, a playoff situation per se, but, you know, there's maybe you can. Maybe we'll see it in the playoffs this year. I hope not, but maybe we will. But I think that's where it comes down to is if you trust Joseph to be your starting point guard in the future, you sign him, you dump Collison. But if you don't, then you're kind of in this weird spot.
Yeah, this is clearly the part we'll probably talk about the most in this whole thing, is because it's so important for the future of them succeeding is who's playing probably the most important position on the court. And it's just such a like somehow Corey Joseph's player option is like a huge linchpin into the Pacers' future with both their salary cap sheet and like how successful they are. So it's really important that we figure it all out and talk about it. But yeah, we talked about this before the show with Joseph. You know, he's probably worth like the full mid-level exception to other teams, which is about $8.5 million next summer. And he's going to make about $8 million. So if he wants to go make $500,000 more and lose his bird rights with the Pacers, like that's something he could do. But then his cap holds on the books, and his cap hold would be like $15 million if he opts out. So it's, you know, there's a lot of factors that make what he does so important.
Yeah. So let's also move on a little bit to the option. So we both can agree Thad Young is probably going to pick up his option and come back, right? It's too much money. No, you're iffy still on it. You like Indianapolis?
No, I think he opts in. I agree with you that is the more likely option. But if you know, he's at that age where like maybe signing a 4 for $40 million makes more sense because he could just fall off 1 year.
So do you think he gets the 4 for $40 million from the Pacers, or is it going to 4 for $40 million from another team?
I think they would like to have him back. I don't know if they'd like to pay him $10 million a year, because by the time they'd be really good, he'd be in decline, you know? So, man, his player option's challenging too. Did I say his date yet?
Yeah, you did early on. It's in
the 29th. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. It's a date where everything else happened. All that stuff happens.
The 29th is going to be a wild day. I'm going to be going crazy on Twitter no matter what happens. But yeah,
you always go crazy on Twitter.
I do always go crazy on Twitter.
Night was another example of that.
No comment. That I think will opt in, and that'll change stuff too, because if he opts out, his cap holds like $20 million. So if they want to keep him, they have to have this $20 million hold just sitting on their books, and that really reduces their cap space. And I'm, you know, if they wanted to keep him, they have to keep that on the books for his bird rights. So it's really tough to see how they're going to do that with him.
Yeah. I see the only way they keep that is if they convince him to opt out by offering him a 3-year $30 million deal. I
mean, yeah.
I think that's what the team be willing to go, because he probably won't fall off too much. I mean, if he falls off the last year, you're not completely screwed. It's an expiring deal you can sort of figure out. But also, he has some value, even if he does fall off a little bit, as a bench guy. You know, he's not a guy who relies on he's not like some super fast guy or, you know, something that you would expect to sort of fade. Kind of like Jefferson in the same sense, where like Jefferson has kind of hung around because he's never relied on his speed. He's relied on his ability basically to outsmart players, which is kind of what Young plays sometimes. So I think that's the only way he would opt out. And so maybe you're basically losing up $3 more million in cap space by doing that. But I'm not sure that's really going to be on the table. And I think the Patriots might be better off just saying, hey, pick up your option, and then we'll see how you do it this year. And sort of then they decide how to keep him long term.
Right. And as like a decent salary fodder guy on an expiring deal, if he opted in, he'd be pretty tradable. And I know we always talk about trading Thad Young. So at least next year without the player option, it'd be easier to do. So that'd be nice, but it just depends what kind of asset. I don't know what kind of asset he would be making $13.7 million next year to other teams or to the Pacers, really. You know, if him opting in is like they go from having a guaranteed max slot to pretty close to, you know, $25-30 million. So it'll be interesting to see what he does.
But do they need a guaranteed max slot? Is there any player?
No. I was just using that as a hypothetical.
I'm sorry. Because I don't think they need a max slot. Ultimately, I think the players are going after, we'll talk about it in a second, is just it's a certain level that just isn't a max player. But the one other thing I wanted to get to was the deciding between Bojan, GR3, or you bring both back. It's the same sense of, do you run, like, are they going to just run it back? I have a hard time believing they're going to run back the same roster, no matter, unless the team goes to the East Finals. I mean, if they go to these finals, they're running it back because you almost have no choice. But my guess is they're a first round, like a tough first round out. Maybe they steal a first round series as like a 4-5 matchup. You know, we can get into all that stuff later. But basically, my guess is with the way Bojan is guaranteed and the way GR3 will have only played 20, 30 games, basically they're both going to, whether you, no matter which one you keep, is going to cost $10 million of cap space.
Yes.
Right? So we could both agree GR3 is probably looking at, honestly, unless he shows some huge flashes, is looking at like maybe a 2-for-1 or a 1-in-1 where he tries to earn, you know what I mean? Like maybe he wants to come back on a cheap deal to prove himself. Maybe, I mean, he never made a lot of money, so he's not like a high pick, so he might just, you know, 3-for-25 might just get him. Like he might just take it and be happy. He also has a pretty rich father, so I'm sure he doesn't, not all that worried about money all the time. Like some other guys, you know, he's got an NBA father who made plenty of money. But do you, you know, the way Bojan has played now you're back, it's back on maybe pick it up. I mean, the way he played in January, it's like, screw Bojan, he's going to free agency. So I know, without your bias Bojan thing, where do you see, what's actually the best move for the Pacers?
Yeah, he's really challenging too, because I would say he's like basically exactly fairly paid. So it's like you're getting no positive value if you keep him, but if you lose him, you're losing a player who's good. So it's tough to decide. Like either way, I think it's just a neutral move. I think for him, it'll all depend on how he plays in the playoffs. You know, if he shows that he can be effective for them in with the stakes as high as they could possibly go, then I think they would probably keep him just because, you know, wings are so important. But if he struggles in the playoffs or the rest of the year, I think they'd probably turn it down and look to use that whatever the difference is, $9 million, to try to get someone else to be Glenn's backup or like a way better player than Glenn.
Yeah, I honestly think Lance is going to be Glenn's backup. I think they're going to find another shooting guard. I think they like Lynch at the three, basically. They played him all year that way. I think they like him at that hybrid 2-3. But that's just like a amusing thought. Let's do a hypothetical real quick, all right?
Okay.
All right, so let's say this. Thad Young opts in for 13.7.
Got it.
You get rid of Bojan, $2 million guaranteed. You get rid of Jefferson. I know his deals, you can use that in a trade possibly later on because the way it's guaranteed and whatnot. But so you get rid of that, so you clear $6 more million cap space. All right. And then let's say Joseph opts out, but Collison, you pick up Collison's option. All right. So now you're about $80 million, right?
Okay. I have 71.
Who else am I? Oh, sorry. I slotted in money for Glenn Robinson. And I slotted $9 million for Glenn Robinson. Okay.
I'm also at about 80 there.
Maybe you're around 80. That leaves you with roughly 20 to 24 in space. The cap's going to be like 104, probably 104 range.
Yeah, it's looking like 102, 103, but yeah.
Okay, sorry. I'm a little off. It depends. It also depends how many competitive playoff series there are, because that affects TV money. Because there was like a certain thing, if the Warriors sweep their whole way to the playoffs, which they probably won't because Houston looks pretty competitive this year. Hopefully they won't. I don't know. And the East is probably going to be a bloodbath, a bunch of 7-game series, it looks like. So there might be some good TV money from the playoffs this year instead of last year. And you might get some more money from advertising on the jerseys. So let's just say it's, like you said, 103. That's 23 in space. Now, right now, the Pacers have, I think they have 7 players who could play in a playoff rotation. So that would be Oladipo, Turner, Sabonis, GR3, Collison, Lance, Thad Young, and then Joe Young, if you're saying. They have 8 guys. So now they got $24 million to find basically that 9th guy to be in their rotation. So there are some names out there. I don't know if you looked at it, but we are in love with Avery Bradley. Is that the guy you go after? I mean, is there a name out there that you go to be that 9th rotation guy?
If you do get a 9th rotation guy and Bojan's gone, I think you almost get like a 6th man wing. You know, like wings are just so important and everyone's trying to get them. So I think they'd have to almost get a wing. Like if Lou Williams was available, he'd be awesome. But
he might be in a trade, to be honest.
Yeah, he might be. But someone like that who just provides a spark of scoring or defense, like off the bench, just someone who's very specialized at something so they can be a steady hand. I think that would be the way to go with that spot. But I don't have anyone off the top of my head.
Yes. So you hit the Lou Williams thing, which may, you know, there might be a deal if the Clippers need to clear cap space.
Tyreek too.
Yeah, so but what I'm more is getting at is it's basically a player that's going to make between 10 and 15, right, roughly.
Yeah.
So with $24 million in space, you have the luxury of basically being able to bring back one of Bojan or Joseph, if whatever, and get another guy.
Right.
So then you can still stash Joe Young for another year, let him keep growing. You're paying him like 1.5. You can eat that. It's not a big deal. So what I'm saying is maybe you really do basically your basically choice is, do we bring back Joseph or bring Bojan? That's the decision at the end of the day. It's not between the point guard and it's bring. I mean, Collison, you throw Collison in there, but it's picking two of those three guys at the end of the day.
Exactly. And the challenge with it would be so easy if Joseph had a team option, but he doesn't.
And then the challenge is also what happens with GR3. I mean, I don't think he's got some ridiculous contract, but I mean, if he plays incredibly well for 30 games, we've seen Solomon Hill work his way into a $13 million contract. I know it was that weird offseason and all that stuff, but still, 30 games is sometimes enough to convince teams to pay you a ton of money.
That is crazy, man. Solomon Hill.
He didn't miss a three for like two straight months.
Yeah, and then we could do a whole podcast on how frustrated I was when he loaded up for like 2 hours on that buzzer beater against the Raptors.
Oh, I was pissed.
It was crazy.
All right. Well, we're getting bogged down in this conversation. This is not what we want to talk about. But my point like I was making was that they have the ability to basically go 10 men deep next year want.
And I think it's will almost certainly do that because like, why not? Why not have more assets on your team as long as Simon's okay with spending the money? Why not have all these assets on your team? Like at worst, your season doesn't go as planned. You can trade them for something else.
Yeah. And I think Simon's willing to go up to the cap. I don't think he wants to go over it. I think that's also to do with maneuverability of the team in the future. And I think they want to stay around, have some cap space, maybe keep three or four open and take on a guy. But I think ultimately they're willing to go close to it. But if also you look at it, if they're a 10-man deep team, where does that put them in contention for the Eastern Conference? So like you look at it, the teams are going to basically be the same teams depending on where LeBron goes competing next year. It's going to be the Celtics, Wizards, Cavs, Bucks, Pistons.
Sixers.
Yeah. Sorry. That's the fifth one. Those are like the five guaranteed. Then you're throwing in Miami possibility. I don't think the Knicks are going to be good next year because Porzingis is going to miss most of the year, probably with his knee injury. So you're going to be a playoff team again. And the 10-man deep rotation with no LeBron in the East all of a sudden make you decently competitive, like a possibility to win two series?
Yeah. That's how you beat a LeBron team too, is because he makes so much, you know, their benches are weaker. They just can't pay everybody. So you got to, if you're 10 deep, you know, you're going to lose when LeBron's on the court, but when he's off, that's when you can take over.
Yeah. So that's what I was trying to get at, is that there's a real chance that you can basically run back most of the roster and pick up another guy at the same time without jeopardizing your long-term cap space. I mean, I think, you know, you could also do the thing where you overpay a guy like the Lakers did and just punt all your cap space away, or the JJ Redick deal where you just take in, you know, you like overpay a guy like Trevor Ariza to come in for 1 year and give him $20 million. You know, he's not worth that, but for 1 year, and then you have cap space again.
And that's a guaranteed money thing for the player, right? Like they want to get all the guaranteed money they can. So, you know, if some other team's offering 2 for $20 million and the Pacers offer, or sorry, yeah, 2 for $20 million and $10 million a year, and the Pacers offer 1 for $20 million, maybe he takes it to get another contract later.
Yeah, like we can probably agree. JJ Redick last offseason was probably looking at a 3 for $24 million, but then he offered 20, I think he makes 23.
Yeah.
By the Sixers. He's like, I'm going to take that and I'll try again next year because I'll still be good enough to get a contract, some kind of contract.
Exactly. And that's huge for him. And that'll be huge for the Sixers because they'll just free up a ton of space. So, you know, the Pacers could totally operate like that because 2019 summer is the summer that Turner is a free agent. And that's the last summer that they'll likely have enough cap space to add anyone, because once they pay him, it's him and Vic are just so expensive. So, you know, they gotta be mindful of that. And I know they don't have a ton of players like extended into 2020, but they will sign guys who are there. So that 2019 summer is going to be very crucial.
Yeah. So then let's say one more thing before we get to 2019. And let's just an overall question. What does Turner's bonus need to do to make the team to sort of, let's say Turner's going to be a unrestricted free agent. Turner's going to get once a mega extension. I mean, he wants probably, you know, I think Andrew Wiggins got 5 years, 148. That's what I mean. That's what Turner would want. What does he have to do to deserve that?
Good question. Be a consistently 38% plus 3-point shooter, and be a little bit better on the defensive end. But I don't know. He's kind of like a complimentary player now with the way that Vic play. Not actually, but like his offensive skills are just so complementary to other players, it's hard to really value how important he is.
Yeah, I think he's got to be an 18 a point game kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah. And I think – well, I think all that on the pick and pops, if he could just pop behind the line instead of doing the long twos, you know, that'd be huge and stuff like that. There's a lot of little things he could do, but I can't say for now because in the summer I would have said he'd get the max for sure, and then he just hasn't made the improvements that I thought he'd make this year. So I don't know.
I also think if he could just develop like a way to hit two post shots a game, that's four extra points, that would get him to get him to where he needs to be. If he just becomes like even a minor threat down low in the post where you can like feed him just occasionally when you're just stuck, like your offense is slowed down, you've got whatever and you're just stuck and you can just give it to him right down to the top of the key and let him just go. You can do that like twice a game. That's enough to probably push him to an 18 points a game.
Yeah, for sure. And that, you know, that's kind of what they need him to be just because, you know, Vic can't always, Vic can't always do all the scoring. When he's out of the game, if you have a guy like Turner, then that'd be huge. And that would make him worth the money just to be that second guy who you can always feed it to.
So then Sabonis is still 2 years away, but what does Sabonis need to do, you think? Is
defense, all defense. Because with centers, like look at basically every good championship team has a center who is at least an okay or good defender. Like Sabonis is not there yet. And it's just so important to a good team to have a guy like that. You know, your DeAndre Jordan, your Tristan Thompson, like those guys are, you know, you think what you want of them, but they are really important and they are part of their team's success because of that. Clint Capella, you know, on the Rockets. Patchouli, the Warriors are the only example, and Patchouli is a pretty good defensive center. They just have so many guys that it doesn't matter who plays center for them. But so if he could be, you know, if he got to be a stud on defense, like Turner levels of defense, I would almost prefer him to be the starter because he would just be so helpful. But then he'd be worth an obscene amount of money.
Yeah, I mean, then he'd be worth the full max, right, for a player. But
a player with that kind of offensive acumen and passing who could play defense, yeah, that's a stud.
Yeah, mine was a little more simple. I think it's just a three-point shot.
Oh.
I mean, I was being realistic.
I think the three would help him play alongside Turner a lot, too.
Yeah, and I think the three would open up the offense. It would definitely help open up so they could play both those guys at the same time a ton. Because then
what if he gets the three and the defense and he's just like the best center in the NBA?
Well, then that Paul George trade was like the greatest trade on earth. You snagged two all-stars for one all-star. It was going to leave anyways.
Yeah. That would be awesome. If Sabonis is ever an all-star, that'd be awesome. But I think, you know, given his dad's pedigree and what he's shown us, that's not unreachable. We're kind of straying from the cap. But, you know, if he gets that good, he'd make like $20-25 million, which would be – he'd be worth it. It would just – they would not have another player. And that's why 2019 again is so important because that's another last year of Sabonis being cheap too.
Yeah. So let's do the 2019 offseason now. All right.
Yes.
So
it's interesting because they're only guaranteed contracts right now. This kind of sounds funny to say. In the 2019, the only two guaranteed things on their books are Victor Oladipo and Monte Ellis.
Oh man.
Because that'll be the year after Thaddeus Young expires and the year if he opts in. And same with Corey Joseph. And it'll be the last year for Bojan and Darren and Al. And, you know, Turner will be entering restricted free agency. Stevenson, that'll be the first year after him. Sabonis and TJ Leaf will both be on the team. I missed those two earlier. I'm stupid. But they both have team options. So technically maybe not, but they both will be. Glenn Robinson, if he doesn't sign a new deal, he'll be gone. Same with Joe Young. So, you know, there's a lot up in the air for this summer, but I imagine that will all be cleared up this summer. So it's really hard to project that.
Yeah. So I sort of did it like this. I had core four for the Pacers, basically four guys that if they're going to build around, basically, if they're going to be good, it's going to be these four guys are going to build around. It's going to be Depot at $21 million a year. You got Sabonis, who this is the last year of his rookie deal, so it's 3.5. And then you got Glenn Robinson, let's say, at an 8-10 deal. So let's just go high end and say 10.
Okay.
Because it gets a 5% increase over whatever his first year was. Let's just say that's what happened. So then you got the Turner deal. So high end, right? Turner gets 5 years, 125. Is that high end about right? A fair number?
I can live with it.
Right? I mean, I think that's probably what we're looking at, 5 years between 100 and 125. I think they're going to pay him a lot. I mean, he's going to get a nine-figure deal. Let's put it that way. But they could make him go after and try to get one, but I feel like that's kind of a dirty thing to do to a guy you kind of said is going to be your piece. I mean, obviously, if he has the same year he had this year, next year, then you maybe don't do that. But I really think he's going to, you know, be better next year because he'll be healthy all season long. And hopefully, and there'll be just, there's so many factors that kind of hurt him early on that it will just be better for him next year. He'll have an offseason with all the guys, with Vic and with Sabonis again. So he'll get better and he'll be able to work out all those things we talked about. Basically, right now, you've got those core four, and then you had a couple cap holds from Joe Young and Lance Stevenson. You're like,
you can get rid of those anytime if you need to.
Yeah. So then Lance, you're probably resigning him, right? You give him the mid-level exception, you give him under. What is the thought?
The thing with Lance is, the challenge with Lance, sorry, is that he will probably be contractually worth less than his cap hold. So signing him actually gets you more cap space, which is weird. So his cap hold is going to be $8.2 million in 2019 summer, but he'll probably get like $5 million or something. So, you know,
seven by that year, if he has two good years.
Yeah, he's not going to get $7
million. If he has two good years, he might. That's the only thing.
But he's not worth that much now, and I don't know how he's going to get better.
What's you have a sheet. What's he worth right now?
I don't, probably about what he's paid. I don't know. He's just a very entertaining, high energy guy. It's not like he's like,
all right, so fine. We'll put it at, so let's slot in $5 million for him.
I'm a really, really bad person to evaluate Lance Stevenson.
What's split or difference and do six? How about that? I said seven, you said five.
I'll live with six.
So that puts him at $73 million with basically five contracts plus then you got, and they got Leaf and they got another rookie. And then they got two draft picks by this point.
That's kind of a scary situation because, hell yeah, they have whatever. That would be like 35 mil of space, but they only have five guys, so they have to be careful because,
well, they actually have eight if you add in Leaf and two draft picks.
Oh, and two draft picks, right? Yeah, so they probably have like 30 mil of space and then some young guys. So the challenge then is like, okay, you have all this space, but you have like a big holes in your roster. Like, you don't have a good power forward at all unless Sabonis plays there by then, and you don't have any point guards on the roster. So like, there's a lot of needs to address. They have to be sparing how they use the money when that comes.
So then, stay with me here. So they've basically got five guys who can play in a playoff rotation. The 4-4-4 plus Lance, and then maybe Tudor Leaf if he has gotten better. This is the point where you got to – this is now Leaf's – will be his third season. This is where he would be able to play – most players by the third season can play in a playoff rotation. You know, Turner did, Sabonis can. That's what you would expect. But he'd be 22 at this point. So there's – let's say there's six guys in a playoff rotation, which means you need to find two to three more.
Yep.
Right? You're weak at point guard. You're weak at, and we get power forward.
Yep.
Theoretically, you could move deep out of point guard. This might be the year. You move deep out of point guard, or you find some kind of hybrid guard like him and play him next to each other. So is this the offseason where they bring in Kemba Walker?
No.
but if Kemba's, let's say Kemba's not going to get the $30 million max because
you know who I want them to sign in 2019? I'll throw my guy at you.
Go ahead, throw it.
Klay Thompson.
Okay, I had that exact name written down, and I thought the only way you're getting him, though, you got to offer him the absolute full max.
Full max, full raises, and just, like, pray the Warriors are afraid of the tax because they probably want to keep him, but holy
cow. He
would literally be the perfect fit on this
team. You maybe bank that maybe Klay wants to be on his own team by then, but I mean, Mog could go to L.A. He's from L.A.
Him and Vic together would be so cool.
But I was thinking more realistically. Kemba's the more realistic player, if I'm not wrong. And he might not. He might only take up 20 to 25.
That number is pretty crazy, though, because that's like Jimmy Butler and Klay and maybe Kawhi. Like, I know they're not in the room.
So Butler and Kawhi are interesting options.
Yeah, they'd have to show out in the 2019 playoffs to have a chance at those two guys. But, you know, I bet Jimmy would not. I don't know. He played in Chicago, so maybe he likes the big cities. But, like, Kawhi seems like a low-profile guy. Like, Indiana, he wouldn't just scoff at the idea of playing in Indiana like a lot of the stars do.
Yeah, I don't think either of them were, honestly. Butler's played in Minnesota right now. I think Butler just wants to win.
He's from the Midwest, too.
Yeah, and Kawhi was almost a Pacer, so maybe he feels like some loyalty to – you know, he wore that hat for – an hour,
5 seconds. Yeah,
that picture of him in that hat. The worst picture any Pacers fan has.
Worst picture ever. God.
The worst picture. But you know, that's an option. But also, that's also the point where is it where you make a trade? So do you just trade for a star? So you know, the names that come to mind. I mean, Anthony Davis could be available. I don't know if they have the assets to do it.
I was gonna say, I think if they even if they threw like Turner and Sabonis and every first round pick in the cabinet at him, I don't think they'd get him.
But so then we're thinking, like, disgruntled point guards. Lillard, maybe. You're looking at, well, I know you don't want to get Wall. Wall's way too much money. I think you can't do that. But look at Damian Lillard, the scratch point guard. I'm trying to think who else would be a superstar at this point.
Cool, man, I'm like getting excited.
No, but I'm trying to, who else are disgruntled super? I mean, we just don't know who'll be the
scratch. Yeah, you don't really know. It just happens. But some's going to implode in Lakeland eventually. Like, are, so maybe someone there becomes available.
Yeah, maybe somebody, maybe Washington implodes. I could see the Wizards imploding in 2 years and then Beal's available.
That's how you got to think for these stars is like, who, what team is the highest chance of implosion? You know, the Cavs do now, but with like if LeBron leaves, there'll be a whole different dynamic and stuff. So it's really hard to say.
Yeah, I mean, if you had Depot and Bradley Beal next to each other, that would be a pretty lethal combination, I think. I mean, you make it work.
Yeah, well, he's not a free agent. That'd be a trade guy, but no, yeah.
Look,
oh, I see. Sorry.
Yeah, that's what I was pointing
out. Sorry. My fault. Yeah, that'd be awesome. He would fit really nice. They'd have so much shot creation if they had those two guys
out. They would have to give up Sabonis at this point. And if Sabonis makes that leap, you might hurt you. But then you also look at in 2019. If Turner does make the leap next year, then you're looking at a whole different team where, like, you've got your two stars. And now you're maybe looking just for that third guy.
Exactly.
You know, maybe you're not even looking at it. Like, if you really, if Turner, like, because if you look at the projecting the East forward, there really isn't any center besides Porzingis who's going to scare you as a young center, right? In the East. The West, you got Towns and you got Gobert. But who else in the East?
Joel Embiid.
Embiid, sorry. But if, but if Turner becomes
the NBA already.
Yes, but is Turner becomes the stretch guy that he like could become, he's scarier than Embiid in the sense of trying to – Embiid can't guard him in the same sense. Because Embiid is not the best perimeter defender.
Oh, Embiid's an amazing perimeter defender.
Is he?
Oh, Embiid might be the best defender in the NBA.
He feels like he's slow, but that just could be my thought.
No, he got cooked by Al Jefferson because he's never guarded
it. That's what it was. That's my biased opinion.
He never guarded that play before. That was awesome.
But if Turner develops that kind of play with his body,
and if Al teaches him, that'd be huge. And I think Turner could get close to that class, of course, and that would be so helpful because, like, we're going to watch – we're recording this on Sunday, as we said earlier. We're about to watch Embiid and what should have been Porzingis in an All-Star game. Like, those guys are studs, and – you know, if Turner gets to that level, that just changes your whole team. Like, the outlook on the Knicks, even though they have a ton of sucky players, looks pretty good because of Porzingis. And Philly, obviously, is a crazy good outlook. So
I just mean, in the playoffs, it's about matchups. And that's how the Pacers were able to get to the East Finals in the LeBron days and compete. Because they had Roy Hibbert. And Roy Hibbert was a matchup nightmare for LeBron James. Because – and Willie Cauley, him and David West were a nightmare. Because he couldn't play stretch – LeBron couldn't play power forward because David West was too big and would just tire him out. And then the way he regarded the rim was the one kind of way you could stop LeBron, who back then with the Heat wasn't a great jump shooter. He became one because kind of Roy Hibbert, but that was sort of the matchup nightmare.
Roy Hibbert, man, he changed the league.
No, I mean, he did. He, LeBron, that first time they played in the East, that first year. So the first, that second round series they put the Heat, LeBron didn't really have a jump shot that whole season.
No, he didn't. They were carried by Wade more that year.
Yeah. And a lot of it was LeBron was really good at just getting to the rim and just banking shot after shot in. Obviously, by the third year when he hit those shots over Thabo Sefolosha in the playoffs, he had developed a jump shot. But he kind of did it because Roy Hibbert, Pacers took advantage of that by just they would play really far out, let him force him to go to the rim, and Hibbert would stop him. And so they won, almost beat them in the second round that year, and almost ruined the Heat like ever winning a championship. But
yeah, and he erased the whole Knicks franchise. But we keep straying from the salary
stuff. I know.
I kind of like it. No, this is good.
Yeah, I mean, Roy Hibbert ruined the Knicks franchise, which is the funniest thing, greatest thing
ever.
He ended what Reggie Miller started. Basically, is how I look at it.
That was peak Hicks versus Knicks was Roy Hibbert literally setting their franchise back 10 years.
He ended Carmelo. Carmelo had this little run. Oh, he's a pretty good player. He ended any thought of Carmelo being a top 10
player. He won the scoring title that year, and then it's like, all right, like maybe Carmelo's finally going to make a conference finals. And then Roy Hibbert was like, nah.
That block was in person. I was at the game.
Nastiest
thing. I mean, like I couldn't believe he did it. Like, I was sitting there, I didn't really see it in the Raptors, but they showed it. I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah, that was something.
Like, Melo was trying.
I got to write about Roy Hibbert sometime.
Melo was just trying to go to the rim. It's honestly one of the peak moments of being a Pacer fan in my lifetime. There are a couple. I have a couple, but that was one of them.
He was something else.
But
that actually sort of becomes Roy Hibbert.
Well, no, but so that sort of ties into what I was trying to make was that winning playoff series is about matchups, right? It's like sometimes like the way to win it to beat a team that's maybe a little more talented, like the Sixers, is have the better matchups or the Celtics, like. The Celtics are a scary team in a sense because in the future they'll have Hayward, Kyrie, Brown, and Tatum. But if Miles Turner is this unicorn type of center, they have absolutely no way to guard him.
Yeah.
And that's how you win, because you players have enough to like maybe get close to matching Kyrie with Depot, and you know, you bring in enough defense on Robinson and try to match Hayward and things like that, where then you just exploit the down low presence of Turner and win a series, because that's like right, that's how this path is. You got to get through the Celtics, or you got to get through Sixers or the Bucks. And but the Bucks don't really have anybody outside of Giannis. So there's also that worry.
But Giannis, like, if you're playing the matchups game against the Bucks, you just lose that one. Like, punt, completely punt on that one and try to win all the rest.
Yeah, but also with, and they don't have Giannis right now. I mean, that could change. The NBA hunts, but like, a free agent is not going to go to Milwaukee at this. Like, if change is going to Milwaukee, they have going to Indiana. The same exact odds. They're both small cities in the Midwest that nobody really wants to go to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'd rather go to Milwaukee if I had the choice.
Just
I love it.
But just because of Giannis, right? But if Depot and Turner make an East Finals, all of a sudden that changes that.
Yes. Agreed.
And you become like the Paul Millsap-like destination. I mean, that's kind of what you're looking at. That's what you want, is the kind of guy who is in that kind of tier, who's a free agent, who you might have to overpay a little bit, but you can get him right as you're kind of hitting your run. They did that with Dave West kind of about 3 years ago. They got Dave West, and that pushed them to that next level.
Exactly. Yeah, that'd be huge. And I don't know who the guys are in that realm that will be available then. Paul Millsap would be one of them, hilariously. But
he'll be too old by then.
Yeah, he'll be 33. Or even maybe even older. I don't know. But yeah, that would be a good move, overpaying like a fringe all-star kind of guy. That'd be a good idea, actually. I'm very much in favor of that. But you can't really see who those guys are yet in terms of who's going to be that good and who's going to be available.
Yeah, and so –
like Harris Barnes or something like that, maybe, you know?
Yeah, I think you're honestly, if the Pacers, you're just waiting on the disgruntled superstar and try to build some assets.
Yeah, just throw the cupboard at him. I think that's a good strategy. You know, that's how you can't win a title without a superstar unless you're the Detroit Pistons, apparently. So you know.
That was a weird NBA year, though, because the Lakers should have won it. The Pacers were better than the Pistons for most of the year. It was a weird NBA year.
Well, they made it two finals in a row, but yeah, that was a weird year. You're right. Dirk was a superstar, never mind. But you just need a superstar to win the title, and Vic's like close there too. But if you could get another guy who's like, you have a superstar on the court at all times, then there you go. That's huge.
Yeah, and there's also a good chance Vic gets better.
Yeah,
I mean, he's super young and he's gotten better every year. Sorry about the league. I mean, obviously you hit a point where you can't get much better, but he seemed like, when you see him in All-Star Weekend, he looks like on the kind of like the same body type as Westbrook a little bit. Like, I see him actually, I'm like, oh, they look like they're equals in some sense. I know Westbrook is a better player today, but I'm saying that they sort of look like kind of the same physique.
Yeah, for sure. He's so cut, especially after that summer. So he could get better and then even be more of a value on his contract, which would be sweet.
Yeah, and the thing is, though, it's very rare that an NBA team is led by a point guard hybrid shooting guard. I mean, you know what I mean, to win a title. I mean, Kobe is the example, but Kobe was like 6'7". You know, you can't be led. It's the small guy mentality. It's hard to be led by the small guy and win a championship. The Warriors did it sort of, but they also had Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, which is like a big three. It's ridiculous. And then you had KD in that. But there are not a lot of examples of like the point guard led teams winning titles.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, Steph's like the guy.
So like maybe you have two number two pieces in both Depot and Turner, and then that's how you find the third one. I don't know. You know, you also could do it the Pistons. I mean, some team's going to have to win. This post-LeBron Warriors era, which is going to start about 2020 probably, somebody's going to have to win it there's going to be this weird gap. It's going to be some weird team of combination you guys going to win, just like there was that weird gap, you know, in 2004 where it was the after Michael, right post-Lakers, before – you know, before LeBron hit his peak, before D-Wade came in, before Dirk hit his, it was like that weird couple-year stretch.
Yeah, you got to hope you hit it, especially with the Warriors being who they are. And that's another thing. Like, if they want to win the title, they kind of have to wait till 2020 because the Warriors would have to collapse.
And I'm not even saying win the title. I think get into the NBA Finals and then you just hope something happens. Kind of like the way the Magic did 2009, 2010. I mean, like, the Magic could have won that Lakers series. I mean, I know they didn't, but there was, like, a couple of changes where that series could turn towards the Magic favor in 2009, 2010.
What?
No, they lost in six.
Oh, yeah, never mind. I'm thinking of the Cavs who got swept by the Spurs.
Yeah, no, the Cavs weren't winning that series. But that Magic, I mean, like, I know it's Kobe and whatnot, but there were a couple games where one thing goes another way, and all of a sudden the Magic are up 3-2 in a series and going, and you know what I mean? It could happen. I mean, it takes some luck, and it takes things bouncing our way, but it happens every so often in basketball where the team that doesn't have, like, the two best players in the league wins. I mean, the Pistons. I mean, it happens once every probably 15 years, but it happens.
Yeah, they could be the team to do it. They have the pedigree and the players to do so.
Plus, if they get to the NBA Finals, I think that's a win no matter what, whether you win or not.
That'd be awesome. That'd be so cool.
I mean, you're just at the highest stage. It's great. And then it attracts you to more free agents and all this stuff. I mean, being in the NBA Finals is a whole different dynamic.
Being in the Eastern Conference Finals even is a whole different dynamic.
It is, and it's a good experience. And so let's sort of tie this together as we kind of finish it up. No, because we are sort of straying. We've strayed off. We
are bouncing around.
We've hit the points. I want to tie together. So how I see it going for the next 3 years is this playoffs, the Pacers need to win 2 to 3 games in the playoffs. If they win anything more than that, just pushes their timeline ahead.
Yep.
Right? That's what they need. Then I think next year they have to win a playoff series. That's the year they have. If they win one this year, then they got to win like two next year. But
crawl, walk, run. You know, you have to do the things in order. If you skip steps, it's when bad stuff happens. Yeah. So,
yeah, but I think that it's not out of the possibility they could win a playoff series this year.
But this is the crawl. This is the crawling year, right? Like, don't jump to running if you win a series. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah. So then, the 2019 playoffs, they make it to the semis, and then the 2020 they get to the East Finals, and then they're sort of in this 2 year run of can they between 2020, 2021, and 2022 of that's where they have to win the championship or have a shot to win the championship is that little run. And then the window will shut depending on, I mean, obviously they could hit on draft pick, that could change things, but that's where the window probably is.
Yeah. And that's when Vic's contract is up too. So perfect.
Well, time. Yeah, no. And that's when he'll be 27, 28, right in his prime.
Yep.
And that's when Turner will be 25 hitting his prime. Like they've kind of actually done a nice job with Sabonis, Turner, and Depot of sort of, they're all on the same projection of when they're going to be at their peak.
Yeah, which is perfect. That's huge.
And then, it's just about finding the right pieces to go around them. I mean, you know, it was the Thad Youngs and the Darren Collisons and the Bojans of 2 years from now, finding those kind of guys, right? It's finding those guys that fit.
The guy, yeah, the Kevin Pritchard specials.
Yeah, and you can't underrate, too, how good Pritchard is at making. I mean, he's good at making trades. I mean, he made an incredible trade on Paul George season that none of us saw. I don't know if he even saw it, but he should get credit for it. I mean, he can make another huge draft day trade or whatever that gets in another player who you think is not – who like you're down on and makes another jump. I mean, the Pacers have a pretty good culture here too. So there's lots of other factors that could really help push the team.
Exactly. And it's so hard to project 2 years cap because like something like that could happen. Like all of a sudden, I don't know, TJ Leaf is like a stud. And then now you need
That's a bad pick.
I don't think he will be. I'm just saying like, what if? And then now you have different needs.
We can both agree they should have taken OG, right?
Oh, for sure.
And he was in their backyard. He was sitting there ready to take.
Gosh, man. They should have taken John Collins would have been a good.
OG was projected around their picking. Yeah. I'm not thinking like Kuzma was not in their projection. Like I understand that. But OG went like 22 or 24 and he was right in that range where you could have taken him and would not have looked at it like anything bad. It would have been reasonable, no critiques, whatnot. It would have been like, oh, you took a guy from IU. Good for you, Indiana.
Maybe we're being too short with TJ. Let's give him time.
That's true. You did talk to TJ and you know, you got your one-on-one with him, so maybe he'll turn into something. Who knows?
I believe.
He is a really he's a really good
shooter. I believe.
And he's just really small right now, but who knows? I mean, he could easily put on a ton of muscle. I mean, you never know.
You didn't laugh at my pun.
I didn't quite get it.
I believe.
Oh, you said believe. I thought you said believe. You said believe. Okay. Guys, if you're listening to this podcast, I hope you laughed at Tony's pun. Believe. Really.
I'm fired.
Really funny. This is what makes great podcasts when Tony makes puns about TJ Leaf.
Oh, God. Oh, man. I'm so fired. The worst. Oh, I'm the worst. All right. Carry on.
But you lost my train of thought. But I
cracked myself up. You were just talking about the culture and growth and how it makes it hard to see that stuff. Projected.
Yeah, and I mean, Depot wasn't that strong as he is now, so it can happen. Guys can put on a ton of muscle.
Yeah.
You know, and who knows what could happen is what honestly the end of the day is, but we just wanted to sort of look at a projection, and so we hope we gave some reference of what it looks like
going forward,
at least.
Exactly, and I try to talk about this stuff on Twitter because sometimes cap stuff's hard to understand, so I hope that helped, and if it didn't, we'll try to help again in the future.
Yeah, and you just – I think with basketball too, you have to always be looking – like the best GM are looking 2 or 3 steps ahead of where the team is currently.
Three-dimensional chess.
Yeah, you can't be stuck in this season. I mean, Daryl Morey clearly doesn't think what's happening. I mean, maybe he is now because he finally has the team that he thinks can win. But, you know, 5 years ago, this was the team he envisioned. He was just trying to figure out how to get to it. Right. I mean, the moves for Eric Gordon 2 years ago and Ryan Anderson and then the move for Jim Harlick. I mean, these are all moves that just sort of like independently are kind of iffy, but then they all got together and they worked out. And so, I mean, that's the best way to do it. I mean, with the same with the Warriors. I mean, they made all these different moves, and after they hit on draft picks, which is extremely, you know, hard to do, hit on a 35 overall draft pick, but it's what it is. I mean, that's what you have to be thinking at least two or three steps ahead of everybody else to be able to at least have a shot at winning a championship someday.
Step one, get superstar. Check. Step two, build a good team around him. In progress.
Yeah, and have a possible second superstar coming up.
Yes.
Have good young talent. That's also a good thing.
Studs in the youth pipeline. Yeah, Capella is such an underrated part of the Rockets. Anyway,
he is, and he's an asset in the sense that he's really good player, but he also is a very tradable player at some point too. I mean, like, maybe. You got to think like that. I know they're not gonna trade Miles Turner, so we're not gonna talk about that. But like, that's what you got to look at is if Turner keeps getting good, he could be the asset that gets you a superstar because his timeline is so good or whatever, isn't it? And you try to win now. I mean, there's just all different moves they can make, but it's good they were able to flip one superstar for another.
Yeah, it's huge, and that brings them to the next step, figuring out.
And it makes this team much more exciting to follow. Like I thought for sure we were heading towards a 3-year just complete gutter rebuild, kind of win 30 games or be stupidly competitive and get the 11th overall pick every year, but they're not.
They're not, and they probably won't be for a long time.
Yeah, you got anything else, Tony?
I do not. I'm probably going to be a little sparse on the writing this week. I'm taking my own.
It's posting on a Thursday, remember that.
Oh, you guys have not read a lot of writing from me because I didn't write very much during the All-Star break. I'll start to do that again now because the All-Star break's over, so I have nothing to promote, no.
Check out my Wednesday article. It will have been posted already. It's going to be great. I'm not going to tell you what it's on because I don't know what it's on yet, but it's going to be great. We were also on another Pacer podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll have been out for a while now. But, yeah, if you didn't listen to the Pacers Pride podcast we did with them, it was really good. You guys got to check it out.
And then for Friday, we're going to have a week preview. And then, yeah, we're going to have a weekend preview, I guess.
Yeah, right? Just the Hawks. I think it's just the Hawks.
No, they play don't they play the Mavs on Sunday?
Is that on Sunday? Yeah, then we'll have two games.
Mavs
are on Monday.
Oh, they're on Monday. Well, we'll do a one game weekend preview. And hopefully Carlson will be back, right? We think he'll be back by that Friday.
Glenn and Carlson, whole new team, baby.
All right. So getting ready for the stretch run. 27 games left. No. They're 33-25, which means there's 24 games left. Wow. 17-7 is the goal. Get to 50 wins. That would be incredible.
And improbable because they have a sick hard schedule.
Well, maybe the Warriors aren't trying the end of the season because they're...
Oh, I saw this. This is cool. This is actually bad. Sorry, cool was the wrong word. They literally play every other day from March 5th through March 29th.
But don't most NBA teams have that too?
No, like exactly every other day, like 5th, 7th, 9th, 11th, 13th, 15th, 17th, 19th, 21, 23, 25, 27, 29.
That's probably good, though. You're not playing any back-to-backs.
That's crazy. That's just so weird.
It's because the Pelicans didn't get rescheduled in that.
Yeah, the Pelicans was what made it happen. They had that big gap.
Well, they've had like 9 days off. I hope all the players are doing their vacations in Cancun or home with their families, whatever they're doing. I hope they're enjoying it and recovering nicely and getting healed for the stretch run now.
I would love that. I hope that's exactly what's happening.
Yep. And one more note. The Pacers have won 33 games. I saw they're projected to win 32 before the season and it's only the All-Star break. So
Boom. No
matter what, they're playing with gravy.
Nate McMillan, coach of the year, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, we can talk about that later. He is Pritchard underratedly said he praised him a ton as being like nobody talks about him being such a big factor. I mean, there's no way this team should be sixth in offense or whatever it is.
And we are having trouble staying the course on this. We tried to sign off and now we're talking about
I'm sorry. I'm just gonna end it on this. There's no way this team should be sixth in offense, and somehow they are. The Pacers have been awesome this year, so no matter what happens in the last 24 games. Hopefully make the playoffs, but nothing's disappointing at this point. It's all been exciting. That's been it for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. We're back, and we'll see you guys tomorrow.